Welcome. If you're your first time attender, if you've never been here before, my name is Pastor Dave. I'm the pastor of K-First, and I'm just thrilled that you're joining with us. After the service, right through this wall, just you can go around in the hallway, we have, it's a guest lunch. It's for those that are brand new to K-First, or maybe you've never joined us for a guest lunch. Maybe you're new in the past couple months. We get guests that come throughout the summer just looking for a church home. Join us over there. That's where the staff is going to be right after service. Normally, we're hanging out in the back. But we're going directly to the cafe, and we'd love to meet you, get to know you. And again, this is for guests, but it's football, so we got chicken wings for you today. So, and I tend to be disgusted with chicken wings, so I might not eat till everybody's gone. I am disturbing with chicken wings. Oh, my Lord. Thank you, Jesus, for chicken wings. We are in a season, just week two in a season. We are in a series. Football. We are in a series about the story of this man named Joseph. If you've never read the story of Joseph, I would invite you just to dive into Genesis, start in chapter 37. Chapter 38 takes a break from the story, gets into Judah, and you read about the mess that is Judah. And the beauty about Judah is you've got, honestly, it's part of the lineage of Jesus being born. So there's just, it's connected, but not connected, but there's just amazingness through the story of Joseph. And we read about this dreamer, the idea of getting dreams, having dreams, pursuing dreams. And even though Joseph's dreams turned into a nightmare quick, God was still with him. His dreams turned into a nightmare, and I know that has never happened to a single soul in this room. But sometimes dreams have to go through some nightmares in order for them to be realized. If you're taking notes, you need a title. You're one of those title people. I'm a title person. The first title was Sweet Dreams Are Made of This, and I got away from that. You're welcome. Stuck in your head all day now. Who am I to disagree? But if you need a better, my wife, wow. If you need a better title, and it's the one on the YouVersion notes, it is this title, I've Got More Inside of Me. I've Got More Inside of Me. Sometimes that we're pursuing dreams and you don't realize that actually the dream is not actually the dream that you're really pursuing. Sometimes God puts something inside in front of us to develop something inside of us. He puts something in front to get something inside because he's trying to grow something in you to go through you. When I am up late at night and I just need to get to sleep, I'm coming off a lion's loss, I am trying to tone down a little bit because I am quite what I guess you would call angry. And so I like to just relax a little bit. So that's, again, you've heard me say, I just jump on YouTube and I'm watching Jimmy Fallon hashtags, just something to get myself laughing. But I will admit there's something that will get me chuckling for which I end up waking up my wife and getting in trouble because I'm laughing so hard I'm like shaking the bed. One is just dumb criminals. If you've ever watched any YouTubes of criminals doing stuff, like one of my faves, it's a classic one, guy walks into a convenience store, goes to pull out a gun, lets go of the gun, and it lands in the cashier's hands, and they just pointed at the criminal. It's awesome. What an idiot. So, but one of my favorite, there's another good one. Dude's pumping gas, and this guy peeks around the corner. It's a security camera, peeks around the corner, and reaches over, grabs the guy's wallet out of him while he's pumping gas, and he opens up the wallet, looks up, and sees the camera. Looks at the guy, sets the wallet on the ground, steps back and walks up and taps the guy. And you could tell what he's doing. Sir, you dropped your wallet. And the guy picks it up, shakes his hand, thank you so much, and he walks away. Side note, someone's always watching. And if you're a teenager in the house, I'm just going to tell you something. Jesus is always watching, and Jesus will always tell your mom. I am a 42-year-old that still gets calls from my mother. What about this? What about that? Did you get a new tattoo? All right, we still have those talks. But let me ask you the question. What are the habits you have when nobody's watching? I mean, think about that guy. He was all fine with what he was going to do, had the boldness to do what he was going to do until he realizes in the moment somebody's watching. And all of a sudden, because somebody's watching, everything about him changed and he went into a different mode. And so I ask again the question, what are the habits that you have when nobody is watching you? Because I believe this is what the Bible is talking about, and this is what others speak about when we talk about the single word character. Who we are when nobody else is watching is the essence of character. Because when it comes to the dreams that God has for you, the places that God is leading you, the calling that is upon your life, that the quality of your calling should match the level of your character. Let me say it actually how it's in my notes. The quality of your character should match the level of your calling. That if God has called you into something, then your character should rise to that level. And so many of us want to get where God has taken us, and the reason why maybe we haven't gotten there yet is because God is trying to grow something in us that we may be resisting. Character is huge. Character, many times, is everything that which God wants to grow, that Christ-likeness in us. But we so want that thing that everybody can hand clap and say, man, that man, look at that position, look at that title. But there, we have seen people throughout history that attain something that their character could not support. I believe that our character is an essential attribute to measure the health of our relationship with the Lord. You want a good measurement, you want a good metric on your relationship with Jesus Christ, look at your character. Because I believe that character is not an optional attribute, it is an essential attribute to measure the health of your relationship with the Lord. And don't just look at what happens at K First or within the house, because it's easy to live something here, but what if you're that guy and you don't realize the security camera's on, who you are behind closed doors, who you are when the church friends don't see you at work, who you are when you're in the locker room without church friends around, who you really are is your character. And I believe one of the most essential things we don't talk about enough in terms of the metric for which the depth of our relationship with the Lord is lived out is that it's contained in our character. We can be in such a rush to arrive that we haven't developed the character that keeps us there. I remember for years as a youth pastor and inheriting a youth group and wanting the youth group to be at a certain level numerically, depth of their relationship with Jesus. And I remember just watching other youth groups grow, watching other youth groups do things that I wanted to do, and being so envious about where they were at, not recognizing after a couple years of being frustrated at God for not taking me to a place. And I remember just sitting down and talking with a friend. He says, but what have you allowed God to do in you? What are you growing within you? Because perhaps you haven't gone to a certain direction, I've gone to a certain place, you haven't arrived, because if you got there, you would not even be able to handle it. How have you grown as a leader? How are you growing as a man of God? How are you growing as a husband? How are you growing as a father? He began to ask me all the questions I really didn't want to hear at that moment. But I remember him speaking to me saying, perhaps if you allow the character of Jesus to grow in you, the level of leadership and the base of leadership in your life will be able to grow. And maybe then God can trust you with the dream if you will simply take the next steps of growth. This is what we're talking about with Joseph. He has gone through a test of his dreams. We talked about last week with rejection. If y'all missed last week, you need to listen to last week. We had a blast. We believe just God just gave some dreams to people on Sunday mornings. Man, we've got some great just notes from people just talking about how God is really just re-showing people dreams for their life, for their marriage. God just giving them a vision of things they need to do with their own personal lives. It's incredible. But anytime that God gives you a dream, the enemy wants to bring in the drama to distract. And if he doesn't distract you with rejection, he will distract you with temptation. And the way that we navigate through temptation is that which is what we call the character of Jesus developed within us. Because temptation is the place where we truly see the character of Jesus lived out or not. Oh, this brings us Genesis 39. We are going to read through the whole chapter. I apologize in advance if you thought you can just get one verse and you're done today. Chapter 39 is so, it's just incredible. Joseph, who at this stage, he was 17 last time we talked about him. Last week, he was 17. He got him a suit coat of many colors. Man, I love that coat. He had a suit coat and had the favor resting upon him. And everything was stripped away. 17 years old and sold into slavery. And he has been sold to a man by the name of Potiphar. Kind of a wild name. I don't know if anybody's looking for names for the kids. Potiphar, I guess, is still out there. And so he's in the place of Potiphar. He'd been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. So he didn't just get bought by just anybody. This is the captain of the guard of one of the greatest empires, if not the greatest, of that age. Verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. Look at that. The Lord was with him so much that a man that did not even believe in the God of Joseph could recognize the reality of the work and the power of God in his life. That's an amazing thought, and it's a very humbling question that we would even ask all of our own lives. Can people recognize the reality of Jesus Christ? Can people recognize that Jesus is alive by the mere presence, attitude, work ethic of our lives? We didn't read that he passed out tracts. We didn't read that he walked around with his Bible because he didn't have a Bible. We read that he just simply lived out the Lord was with him and upon him, and he became a successful man in everything that he did. Now, this is important here. This is so key for our story. Why? Because it comes out of tragedy. It comes out of this place where he has been denied by his family, he has been sold by his family, he has traveled hundreds of miles, and he is bought by somebody, and he gets into the place where he just serves, and he is faithful where he has been placed. It would have been easy for Joseph to play a part of the victim. How many of us, things can be going right, but we will find the one thing to land upon that becomes our identity because it becomes our attention. Yeah. Some of us spend more time in validation from others than in victory in Jesus. And we've got to stop being casualties to the circumstances because we possess victory in our lives. And so he steps into it. He may not have been able to enjoy the fact that he was a slave to somebody, but guess what? Deep inside, he was a slave to nobody. He was full of victory. And because he knew the Lord was with him, wherever he went, blessings just began to follow. And it followed so much, it blessed the people around him, even the pagan Egyptians. Well, I don't want them blessed. They were pagans. Some of us are so determined to make other people miserable. Just get into Jesus. Just be full of Jesus. And when you're full of Jesus, let the blessings of that flow in people around you. Because Joseph was more than the substance of his circumstances. He was full of the substance of God. Man. That's not bad preaching. Sweet dreams are made of. Sorry. I want to encourage some of you this morning. What God has placed within you is greater than what you face around you. Oh, faith, rise up. Oh, heart, believe. Let faith rise. I wish I can claim I told Pastor Abbott to do that song this morning. But I want to encourage you that what God has placed in you is greater than what you face around you. This is what John was talking about in 1 John chapter 4, verse 4, that we quote so often. Greater is he who is within me than he who is within the world. John, who was a proponent of just standing up against the empire that boasted all of the power of the world, he's like, listen, I know what I see around me. I know the military power. I know the governmental power. But guess what? God has placed something within me that is greater than that which I face. So therefore, I look at it differently. I respond differently. And instead of being a victim of the waves of the world, I'm going to let the world see the victorious Lord inside of me. It was not too long ago, I was riding a jet ski, and it's dangerous right there, letting me on equipment. So I was going out to the open lake, I was just, you know, just getting through the little canal at whatever speed I wanted to go on, and I started getting yelled at. Me being yelled at in public is not out of the norm, all right? But this guy starts screaming at me, and so I slow down. I'm like, dude, what are you saying? He's like, this is a no-wake zone. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? You're awake. Is messing with my beach. I'm like, oh, well, I've got a beach. And then he's like, so I get back and I'm asking people, what is a no-wake zone? Well, in the canal, in this area, we don't want the wake to mess with the docks or the beaches or anything else that's laying on the beach. You have to wait till you get out to open water before you can really open it up. I wonder if we have created a culture in church today for which we treat the world like a no-wake zone. That maybe we can go at a speed where we don't disturb anybody's life. We can live our own little Christian lives. And we can love people inside the church, but we don't want to leave a wake. Listen, there's a difference between being a splasher and leaving a wake. Splashers annoy me. Those people, when you're trying to get out and get used to the water, here, get used to the water. Let me get used to you, all right? I should have done that. I'm a pastor. Y'all think the same thing. It's different to me splashing and annoying people. Here, get used to this. But I wonder if maybe the change that we have been praying for, God wanted to change something in us so that wherever we go, like Joseph, we leave a wake of the love of Jesus wherever we go, a wake of the mercy of Jesus, a wake of the grace of Jesus, a wake of the patience of Jesus, self-control, love, joy, peace, patience, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness. Go into Galatians. That's the type of wake that you were meant to live. We weren't meant to be wake-free, but the world will say, yeah, just keep your stuff inside the church. But this isn't the church. This is the building. But we as the church should go. And the world is not wake free. They need the love of Jesus. They need blessings at your workplace. They need integrity. They need peace. They need whenever they see everybody else just in disarray and cheating. They need someone to rise up in honesty and integrity. They need a wake of the movement of the presence of Jesus wherever they go. We need Josephs to rise up. And wherever we are placed, it may not be where we ultimately end up, but dang it, we're going to be faithful where God has us right now. And leave a wake of his presence and mercy everywhere. We're never meant to be wake free. I gotta get back to my message. Verse 6 through 7. Wait, I think we skipped a verse here. I heard it, yep. So Joseph found favor in the sight, in his sight, Potiphar's, and attended him. And Potiphar made him an overseer in his house and put him in charge of all that he had. Again, he's 20 years old. And he's a slave. And there was such favor on Joseph, integrity, honor, that Potiphar gave him charge over everything. That's ridiculous. That's amazing. From that time, verse 5, He made him the overseer of the house and all that he had. And the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had, in house and in field. Verse 6, so he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. Because of him, he had no concern but the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. That's all we know of Joseph. He was handsome in form and appearance. If you need a good vision of, think about him. No, that's a weird thing to say. Don't think about another man that way. In fact, right now, turn to your husband and tell him, you are handsome in form and appearance. Nobody's doing it. He was handsome in form and appearance. Why am I reading that still? Why did my voice go up like that? And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph. And she says, lie with me. But Pastor, what does that mean in the Hebrew? If I have to explain that, you're going to miss the rest of the message. Joseph said, lie with me. She's a thirsty girl. But he refused. Am I wrong? Some of y'all are never coming back again. Some of you are like, I'm coming back. I like this guy. But he refused and said to his master's wife, we literally have no other description of this girl. I bet you, because if they gave her name, no one, it's like, we don't have any more Delilahs, we don't have any Jezebels because of these moments. So they left her name off here. He refused and said, behold, because of me, my master has no concerns about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. What is really keeping Joseph? Let me ask you this. What is keeping Joseph from saying yes to her? Y'all got spiritual on me. Integrity, Pastor Dave. Sermon's done. Let's go eat chicken wings. But let me... Here's our scenario. This man, young man, is literally hated by his family. Except for his mom and his dad. 10 brothers hate him. Stripped him of any favor, threw him in an empty well, planned to kill him, sold him into slavery, lied and broke his dad's heart, saying that he was killed by an animal, traveled hundreds of miles to a foreign country for which nobody speaks his language, and in Egypt, nobody liked Hebrews. So he's in a place that already despises him for who he is. So it's nothing more of what he's always known. He is 20. And all of a sudden blessed with massive amounts of authority for one of the most important people in the entire land. He is lonely, rejected, hated. And finally somebody shows up and sees something in him. Somebody desires him for the first time in his life since his father. I ask the question, what is keeping him from saying yes? What is keeping him from doing this? I mean, and in this situation, his master is gone and fully trusts him. In this place, this low place, how do you not say yes? And again, we like to deify these human beings and not make them human. Joseph is fully human. What is keeping him? Let me speak a word this morning that would simply say this. Temptation is always at its highest when we are at our lowest. If you don't think this was tempting for this 20-year-old, all this power, for his whole life, he has been nothing more than rejected by everybody but his mom and dad. Told how much he's hated, mocked for his dreams, sold off, lied about. He's got nothing. And he is hated, and somebody finally gives him attention, that he has been craving. Because when you are at your lowest point, temptation will always sneak in at his highest, at its highest point. Verse 8, but he refused. Behold, my master is no concern about anything in the house. Everything's in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you're his wife. How can I do this great wicked thing and sin against God? I'm gonna stop right there, because Joseph did not have the Ten Commandments at this point. He never had them. Moses wouldn't come by for a number of years. Years. There was no thou shalt not shack up with people who are not your spouse. None. There was no written rule to tell him what to do. Some of us, we are so determined, well, if the Bible doesn't say it, I'm just going to do it. Let us be a people who are willing to walk in the conviction of the Spirit of God on our lives. Because some things are not a matter of sin, it's a matter of conviction. And holiness doesn't come from following a rule, it's following the Lord. He had a conviction that says, I can't do this, it's sin against God. Boy, there's a little spot I wish I could sit on for a while, because at this stage, they didn't have a written word. So what did they have? They only had that which was passed down from their moms and dads. Moms and dads, it is important that which you receive, you pour into your children, pour into your grandchildren. When you pass on the legacy of Jesus, watch the fruit begin to spring out. That's a different message. This is why we said last week that we turn up the decibels of heaven, because if I can hear from God, I can now understand what I am seeing. If I can hear from, get a conviction of the Spirit of God in my heart, if I can hear from God, if I can remain myself in his presence, if I can begin to facilitate times of prayer, fasting, get myself in his word, if I can begin to serve others, and the more I turn up the decibel of heavens in my life, the less I am shaken by what I see around me. Because when we allow faith to possess our heart, it will shape what you see. Faith rise up in us today. Verse 11, one day, but one day. That's how it all happens, isn't it? If you've heard somebody say that, life is going good, but one day. Following the dream, but one day. It's always that one day. When he went into the house to do the work, and none of the men of the house were in there. It's dangerous. I don't think this was a happenstance. This was planned. She caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. I don't have to translate that. But he left his garment in her hand, and he fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to him, see, he has brought us a Hebrew to laugh at us. Look at the context. You know the people that we don't like? Look, he's come in and he's coming to mock us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard, I lifted my voice and cried out. He left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. And she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. I want you to write down these words. Sin dwells at the intersection of desire and opportunity. Sin doesn't live there. It just dwells there, because sin doesn't want to dwell in that location. It wants to dwell in you. And sin dwells at the intersection of that which we desire and the opportunities that are there. That's why we're not a church of extremes. We're a church that follows the leading and the conviction of the Holy Spirit, because there are some things in our lives that are not a matter of sin, but they are a matter of conviction. And if we don't learn how to live by conviction, then all we have to do is live according to our own desires. And all of a sudden, when the opportunity comes, it is no wonder why so many of us fall and our character gets crumbled, because we are living according to our cravings instead of according to our convictions. We all have areas of temptations and struggles. You do and I do. We all have it, and they may be different. But the enemy knows what you're ashamed of. He knows what you try to hide. He knows what you haven't confessed. He knows what nobody else knows that maybe only the security cameras catch. He knows. But Joseph, in conviction, looks at her and says, what you are offering to me is inconsistent with the direction and dream that God has given me. Some of us need to look at temptation and realize that character is not developed without adversity. But we develop it, and when adversity comes, that's when we begin to see that which God has put inside of us, and we look at the intersection of opportunity and craving, and that's where character is truly made and lived out, because we look at that mode, and we begin to say, I know what is in front of me, but it is inconsistent with the direction and the dream that God has given me. You got to curb your appetite. You got to curb it. Because the enemy knows what you desire. In my neighborhood, other than the police were the most probably most frequent outsiders coming on in, but after that was animal control. We had these things called skunks, raccoons, but the worst of the worst are possums. If you don't believe in demons, you have never come around the corner into a trapped possum and had that sucker hiss at you, you will not only wet your pants, you will believe in demons. I'm telling you, one time I was taking a shortcut to my friend's house and I turned the corner and the size of this possum, if it was a rat, it would have been Splinter from the Ninja Turtles. It was huge. Thing hisses at me and ran the other direction, went the other way around the block because I'm a stupid possum. But all animal control would do is they set up these live traps. And I remember my friends that I was watching, we like making friends with the animal guys because they had great stories. And so we were talking and they would put these little like petri dishes in there and they would set them in there and we didn't know what substance they put in. They said, well, we're putting something in here because we hear there's raccoons or we hear there's people, the possums are getting into things. And so we know what it is. And therefore we put that which is in that dish, which appeals to the appetite of the animal. The enemy wants to put something that will appeal to you. It's going to tease you or tempt you with something that you're not going to want. Desire and opportunity come together. And we have to learn to curb our appetite for which our lives are starving for. I was talking to my wife about this earlier this week. If you're wanting to curb your appetite physically, you know what you can do? Drink water. Grab water. Drink water. It doesn't cure the appetite, but it curbs your appetite. Because if you don't drink water, you end up snacking or eating things. And then people say, well, I just couldn't stop. So I was snacking and then I couldn't stop. Do you know why? You weren't even hungry to begin with. You were just dehydrated. And some of us, we keep craving. And instead of going to that which Scripture says is the living water and getting our lives hydrated and getting our thirst taken care of, we realize we were never thirsty. We were just hungry. We were never hungry. We were really thirsty for what Jesus has. But when we try to walk away from what Jesus offers, we start getting our cravings on this and on that, on this, on that. Stop feasting on the things that will never satisfy. Get into that which God offers in Jesus. You've got more flowing through you. When you've got Jesus, you've got more inside of you than that which the temptation is telling you you have. You are more than just the cravings of a human being. There's more in you. And when you've got the Spirit of God in you, you've got faith in you, you've got more in you to get through it. I've got to wrap up here. You want to develop a good conviction of character. Because I'm just going to tell you, at times of temptation will come. You're going to face temptation. You'll face it when you're trying to turn left out here. Trust me. You'll face it at a restaurant. You'll face it at work tomorrow. So my goal is that we can develop this godly character within inside of our hearts so that when those intersections come up, that we won't deter from the direction or the destination, the dream that God has given us, because we are guarded by that which he put inside of us. Number one, I want you to put on the life of Christ before the times of temptation. Put the life of Christ into action before the times of temptation. You're like, that sounds overly practical. Most things are. put the life of Christ into action before the times of temptation. I was just talking to somebody the other day that we put our care team together to go visit hospitals, and all of a sudden the amount of our hospital visits went down, and I've got this whole care team trained. I'm like, how does that happen? But the beauty is this, we put this stuff into action. We get ourselves prepared and taken care of, so when the time comes, we are prepped and ready. Because the time to develop character is not in when the temptation happens, it's before we get there. And we're putting the life of Christ in so that when we are faced with it, we're ready to engage. It's like being a hunter and never having fired a rifle before you go out hunting. You get to the range, get out in the woods, put it to work. Because if you don't set your standards before temptation shows, you're already done. Secondly, don't just put the life of Christ in action before those times. Stop living your life with a safety on. Activate your walk with Jesus. There's a young man that we went hunting with years ago. His name is David. It's a great name. And David bought this old World War II rifle that... this thing kicked like nothing I've ever shot before in my life. And he had never really shot it before we got out to the range. And so he didn't really use it. It was just brand new to him. And so he went out hunting and this 6-point buck comes in. Well, he has never worked the safety before in his life. So he raised up the gun, he pulled the trigger, the safety was on. And it's not a hunting rifle, it's a World War II rifle. So he goes to take the safety off. The thing clicks so loud, the deer's gone. And he walks back. Did you get the deer? No. Did you shoot? No. Why? The safety's on. Stop living life with the safety on. Stop living life with the safety on your Bibles. Stop living life with the safety on your worship. Stop living life with safety on your prayer life. Take the safety off and begin to not just exercise the life of Christ, but begin to put it into such action. Stop living life with your love on safety when you're at work. God has placed you there for a reason. God has put you in that place for a reason. God has put you in that class for a reason. You're on that football team for a reason. You're on the cheerleading team for a reason. Don't live your life with the safety on. This is Joseph. It says, verse 13, when he saw, this is when she saw what he had left behind. I'm talking until I find my spot. Verse 14, she called to the men. Verse 15, she begins to say, as soon as he lifted up my voice, he cried out, left his garment. Verse 17, she told her husband the same thing. The Hebrew servant whom you brought among us. Oh, she sifts major blame to her husband. He came in to laugh at me, and as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside, and he fled out of the house. And as soon as his master heard these words that his wife spoke, this is the way your servant treated me. His anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, to the place where the king's prisoners were confined. He was there in prison. Verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. And the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with them. Three times in one chapter, we are reminded the Lord was with them. Whatever he went through, he went through, but the Lord was with them. The same thing that Potiphar saw in him, the warden saw in him. It's that tangible thing called character. So the question I ask this morning is this: what does your character say about you in this moment? Honestly, are there places in your life that maybe you find yourself cutting corners because you think nobody is watching? Maybe you're going to this place where you're dabbling, you're entertaining temptation and things at the intersection of desire and opportunity, and you're trying to manage it, you're trying to maintain it. Could I give you just a really strong encouragement today? Have the spirit of Joseph and stop trying to manage it. Stop trying to negotiate with sin. In the name of Jesus, drop it like it's hot. Leave it behind. Stop messing with it. Because what God has placed within you is greater than what you face around you. And what God is calling you to is worth far more than the moment that wants to be sacrificed for to attain a moment of gratification. Would you bow your heads with me?